You're listening to In Focus on 107.7 The Wolf. I'm John Damschroeder. My guest today joining us from Silicon Valley is Think Computer founder Aaron Greenspan, a native of Shaker Heights, Ohio. Aaron is best known for his connection to Facebook. As a student at Harvard, Aaron created a website called The House System. Within that Harvard student service was a site called The Facebook. Facebook founder and CEO Mark Zuckerberg was a Harvard student at the same time as Aaron Greenspan, and their interactions over Facebook as students ended up in a 2009 legal settlement where Mark Zuckerberg acknowledged the link between the Facebook page in the House system Aaron Greenspan created and the company Zuckerberg launched. There's a non-disclosure agreement tied to the settlement of that case, so Aaron can't tell us about any financial considerations tied to ending the case, but there was no non-disparagement clause in the settlement, as is so often the case. So Aaron Greenspan has been able to speak out on issues related to Facebook and has done so recently. In fact, Aaron, I invited you onto this broadcast after reading your thoughts indicating that Congress was bringing a knife to a gunfight in looking to break up Facebook based on antitrust issues. You indicate the Securities and Exchange Commission and the Justice Department should be going after a Ponzi scheme, creating hundreds of billions of dollars in stock market capitalization for Facebook. Aaron, what's the basis for that claim?
Well, ever since Mark started his version of the Facebook in 2004, he's been on a growth treadmill of his own creation. And so his goal has been to keep growing the site as much as possible every month, every year. And he's been extremely successful at that. You know, it's obviously a worldwide phenomenon at this point, and they like to publicly boast that they have 2.3 billion monthly active users. This is a figure you hear a lot if you read any news articles about the company because it's just an easy number to repeat. But the fact of the matter is that many of those user accounts are not real. They're not real people. There was actually just a New York Times documentary that aired on FX and is also on Hulu by this reporter, Jack Nickis, about just one fake account that he followed from I'm not sure exactly where in the United States, I think Florida, all the way to Nigeria. And that's just one fake account. Facebook acknowledges that 5% of their accounts are fake and that 11% are so-called duplicate accounts for a total of 16%. Each percentage, of course, would be about 22 million accounts. So we're already talking about hundreds of millions of fake accounts that they acknowledge. My argument is that they are not acknowledging the full extent of the problem, and that there are actually probably close to a billion fake accounts of those 2.3 billion monthly active users. And so what's been going on is that Mark needs to show Wall Street that Facebook is constantly growing. But that's not possible anymore because there's only so many people in the world who want to use Facebook, and most of them already are or have dropped off. And so with actual growth negative, something that he really can't admit to the stock market, you've got to fill in that gap. And the way to do it is by allowing fake accounts to flourish. So, you know, Facebook, I'm not arguing that Facebook is actually creating these fake accounts. I'm arguing that they're simply looking the other way while people with an economic motivation to do so create them by the thousands every day. And that's the nature of the Ponzi scheme. You have instead of new money coming in to refresh money going out, you have fake accounts coming in to refresh users going out.
Now, there's a class action lawsuit against Facebook making exactly that same claim, saying that Facebook has told advertisers they will receive X number of impressions and many more people in the various demographic targets than actually exist, according to census data, in dozens of the markets being sold. Wall Street hasn't seemed to get very concerned about this issue. So do you think that there's an expectation that there's going to be a settlement that makes the issue go away and keeps this sort of information from being revealed?
Well, it's complicated. The case that you mentioned, which is Singer versus Facebook, it's sort of the flip side of the same coin that I just described. It's not saying necessarily that they're running a Ponzi scheme. They're just saying that there are more people being advertised as potentially reachable by Facebook than there are in reality, like you said. That case, whether
and
or not
the
it
advertising
settles,
rates are based on those false impressions.
Correct. Correct. Advertisers are paying Facebook money with the assumption that the clicks and the views and the likes that they're getting are actually legitimate, which, of course, in many cases, they are not. And to be fair, that's a problem that extends just beyond Facebook. There's a long history of click fraud in digital advertising, which applies to Google and Yahoo and their predecessors. But it's, I think, particularly pronounced with Facebook because of the way that they go about allowing these fake accounts to propagate. As for the settlement issue, though, whatever happens in the Singer case isn't quite as important as what happens with the federal government. And so you have these two agencies that have been looking into Facebook, the FTC, the Federal Trade Commission, and the SEC, the Securities and Exchange Commission. And as it so happens, they both announced settlement agreements or consent decrees with Facebook at the exact same time that Robert Mueller was testifying in Washington, D.C. Historically, Facebook has been very good at placing their bad news at points in the news cycle when people are least likely to notice. And so, yet again, they pulled that trick. The FTC agreement is actually something that you would typically expect to be rubber stamped by a federal judge, and then it goes into effect. But what's happened in the past few days is that the nonprofit Epic, which is a privacy nonprofit, has filed a motion to intervene in federal court. And they're asking for a hearing to allow other people, aside from themselves, to come in and argue why this FTC $5 billion fine and consent decree is actually something the judge should not approve. And my personal opinion is that Epic is completely correct, that this FTC settlement would be horrible for the American people. It might be good for Facebook shareholders. And I should disclose that I am short Facebook. So as somebody who wants to see the stock go down, it would be good for me if the FTC agreement was not rubber stamped. But I think there are real national security concerns here. By allowing Mark Zuckerberg to get off the hook without ever having been interviewed, without ever having turned over any email, without ever explaining what happened from his standpoint with Cambridge Analytica, that's a real travesty of justice. And so I think there's really no way that an agreement structured that way should be approved by a judge, and we'll see what happens.
So a $5 billion fine against Facebook, the largest in the history of the Federal Trade Commission, is a small price to pay, in your view, for Facebook, in that it gives Facebook blanket immunity from any of these issues from 2011 forward, and Mark Zuckerberg never has to answer under oath why he was telling investors or regulators, because he testified in front of Congress and he talked to investors regarding user data privacy, and he said things that later turned out not to be true. He doesn't have to answer for that and has immunity from that. Is that why Epic wants to basically get in between this decision and have the judge overrule accepting this?
Yeah, I think that's one of their main reasons that they cite in their motion. They also have other discrete complaints they've filed with the FTC previously. And I think part of their argument is that by allowing this settlement to go forward, that would sort of nullify the effect of the complaints that they've already got on file in some cases, which isn't fair to them. So they have particular standing, I think, to bring this kind of request. I do want to say something, though, about the way that Mark has presented himself when he has shown up in front of Congress and other governments. What's really remarkable, having known him in some capacity since 2003, is that when he's in public, now that he's a public figure and the CEO of this multinational corporation, it's almost as though there's this incentive for the PR people at Facebook to present him as sort of stupid, not really sure what's going on in the company, not entirely certain if, you know, this feature or that feature is really a problem. Everything is sort of vagued up, to use a term that I would use with my friends. And, you know, I don't think Mark is stupid. I recall him being extremely aware of technical issues when we were in a course called Computer Science 91R at Harvard. And our goal in that course was to build a voice recognition system using PHP, which is the same language that my Facebook and his Facebook were written in. You know, he was quite aware of technical issues. He was less aware of business issues in many cases, but he's certainly not nearly as dumb as they're trying to make him seem. And so it's a little bit infuriating to think that Mark has nothing to say about privacy or about the way in which Facebook's advertising systems work, because he knows that kind of technical minutia quite well based on my past experience. Now, I can't say exactly what he knows or doesn't know at the moment, but I would think that it would be extremely important for him to be deposed. Certainly, anytime he's in front of the government, it should be under oath. And I think he's gotten an enormous free pass so far, which is disappointing.
And Facebook is now trying to win regulatory approval to create a cryptocurrency called Libra, which would allow Facebook users to convert conventional cash to a cyber currency that could be used for online transactions, I should say. Facebook says this will give millions of people around the world who have no bank a way to participate in a secure economic system. But do you think we can trust a company that's being fined so heavily for failing to live up to the requirements of U.S. business law?
Well, no, obviously. I don't think that's a particularly good idea, but I have a few additional thoughts. I have some experience in the payments industry, and unlike social networking, when Facebook started in 2004, there was really no kind of regulation of any sort that would have applied. Payments are not the same. Payments are highly regulated. In addition to the Bank Secrecy Act at the federal level, you've got state money transmission laws in 48 or 49 states. It sort of changes depending on the year. But, they've already begun the process of obtaining their state licenses, but they only have some of them for what they're calling Calibra, the U.S.-based organization that would sort of be running it, although that's a little bit unclear as well. The issue actually goes back to fake accounts. When you have, let's just take them at their word and say that they've only got something like, 300 million fake accounts. When you've got that many false identities on a network, and then you start layering payments functionality on top of that, what you're creating is an anti-money laundering nightmare. And I don't think I've ever heard or conceived of a system where something with that much falsity baked in was then connected to the payment system. I can't imagine anyone thinking that that's a good idea. Now, that hasn't really been the focus of the scrutiny that we've heard so far in the media. Most of what we heard is that, it might be a threat to the Federal Reserve and central banking, and would it treat conservatives fairly? And, there's been a lot of sort of, I think, secondary or peripheral concerns about it. Certainly, privacy is an enormous concern for a company that has this history of completely ignoring privacy considerations and profiting from that. But I think really the main worry I have is that this would be the ideal system for money laundering. I don't think anything would come close, not even Bitcoin necessarily, because Bitcoin doesn't really reach as many people. So I hope that going forward there is more discussion of how this is even something that Facebook thinks is possible to carry out in a safe way.
What if they made them run it like a bank, where they had the Know Your Customer law
Well, that's already the case. And I guess what I'm saying is that's not possible.
Okay.
You know, they cannot possibly comply with the Bank Secrecy Act, knowing as they do how many fake accounts they've got to contend with. And this would, of course, create an incentive for there to be even more. So it's really incredibly problematic.
Okay. You know, there was a time not so long ago that Facebook was a lot like Uber or Lyft, a company with many users and much media attention but no profit. And it may well have been Ohio-based Procter & Gamble, the longtime spending leader in advertising, that showed Facebook how to monetize that user data. P&G wanted to target most likely users of their products and knew it was Facebook best able to do things like show Pampers ads or coupons to parents posting pictures of their new baby. Now, isn't that data-driven targeting that makes a Facebook ad so appealing to these marketers?
Targeting does make it appealing, and the funny thing is that it's largely conventional wisdom that makes it so appealing. There is something that just sort of clicks in your head, and you think, well, if I know specifically what people are looking for and what they're interested in buying, then I show them ads for that thing, it'll naturally result in a higher conversion rate. There was a recent article in the Wall Street Journal citing a paper that was just written about this very issue, where some scholars, I think one maybe from the University of Minnesota, if I'm remembering correctly, they looked at how effective targeted advertising was, and it turned out that the gain in conversion, and I think this is measured by revenue, was something like 4%. So it was actually incredibly minuscule compared to just, you know, standard banner ads that have no idea what you're particularly interested in. So I think
the cost was considerably higher than 4%.
Yes, the cost was often, you know, five times as much. So, you know, you're paying a lot more for each ad and you're not getting a whole lot more for it, according to this one paper. Now, you know, it's just one study, so there may be other studies that show something different. But I thought that was pretty interesting. And it sort of jives with my sense that a lot of what happens in the ad industry is sort of throwing things at the wall and seeing what sticks. Because if you're Coca-Cola and you have a budget for the quarter to spend ad money, you're going to spend it most likely places that have a lot of views. But you're not necessarily going to know how many cans of Coke you sold because of any particular ad. That's just not really possible. And so even for these sophisticated ad buyers, and, you know, I'm not saying all of them are just guessing all the time, but there is some guesswork involved. You don't really have perfect data to make these decisions. And so companies like Google and Facebook, they exploit that information gap to make profit.
Absolutely. You know, the newspaper industry is one that particularly embraced new Facebook as a new revenue source, and Facebook tried to make itself a more credible news source with a publisher's collaboration program. But that's pretty much blown up because the publishers realize now that they're doing all the journalistic work, but Facebook is taking the lion's share of the revenue. Isn't that a pattern that has been with Facebook since the very inception of the company?
I think so. I think whether you're talking about its effect on news or the way that Mark has worked with his own fellow executives, he's shown time and again that he is not a trustworthy actor, to use the language of someone I admire, Masha Gessen, who writes for The New Yorker, or the New York Review of Books as well. You know, he is a bad faith actor. He acts consistently in bad faith. Another word for that is sociopath. I've been criticized before for calling him a sociopath because it's not really something people want to hear. Certainly not something that the New York Times is going to print in their op-ed section. But it's funny because lately I'm not the only one using the word. And I think people have finally figured out that when you have a pattern that goes back this far and is this consequential, although it doesn't have to be, but it certainly has been in Mark's case, it really matters to accurately diagnose the problem. And I think the problem here is that Mark just does not care. He doesn't care if American democracy is threatened. He doesn't care if people get hurt. He doesn't care really what happens so long as he is in charge and he has more authority. And, you know, we've let him get to this point.
The American Consumer Satisfaction Survey, conducted just up the road from me in Ann Arbor, Michigan, shows Facebook users are reacting to the issues we've been talking about here, Aaron. Satisfaction scores are plunging. Facebook is currently rated at 63%, lower than airlines or cable TV. Now, as a guy who started a technology company while still in high school, do you have some thoughts on what Facebook could do to turn around this consumer dissatisfaction?
Yeah, I think it's pretty simple. You start with firing Mark. Mark isn't fit to be CEO. I think that's obvious. I think people have figured that out. And a lot of the satisfaction issues that they're apparently having stem from the fact that he keeps trying to make the network bigger. But in reality, the network needs to be smaller. And this goes back to a debate we had in 2005, where effectively we were talking about the trade-off between quantity and quality. And I was arguing that if you open the floodgates and everybody comes pouring in, you're going to suffer in terms of quality and you're going to have a spam problem. Now, you know, people think of spam typically with regard to email, but that's exactly what we have here. Is we have fake everything, fake people, fake offers, fake, wire transfer situations with Western Union and MoneyGram scams. There's an enormous spam problem, and that is a large part of the reason why satisfaction is so low. As it so happens, I just did a public records request to the Ohio Attorney General. Ohio is a state, unlike California, where I live now, where the Attorney General complaint records are actually considered public information and not confidential. And I think there are a number of records they have for Facebook at the AG's office, but the one for the main company has, I think, 37 complaints. And if you look through them, they consistently show people getting ripped off for Zynga games and for scams where they sent money to people they didn't know and ads that didn't work. And, you know, there's a variety of reasons why people are writing into the Ohio Attorney General. So I expect that that won't change unless they get a handle on the size of their user base. The problem is they just can't do that. Again, it's like kryptonite for them to tell Wall Street that we're actually trying to shrink. And secondly, I'm not sure it's really possible for them to control the network anymore. And this is something I told the UK Parliament when I testified in June. At some point, the network is so big that it's just beyond the capability of even, you know, the 20 or 30,000 nominally intelligent people they have working there to control. Like, there's just too much going on. It's like trying to police the entire world, and they're just not set up to do it because it's not possible. So I don't think satisfaction is going to go up very much anytime soon, but I could be wrong.
Imagine you'd never met Mark Zuckerberg at Harvard. Would you have taken the idea to company formation stage? Would Facebook have gotten past Harvard if you were the driving force, Aaron?
I think it would have. I certainly intended to take what I'd built and bring it to other schools and companies, but I had a much, much slower growth trajectory in mind and a different business model. I thought it made sense for schools to sort of purchase the software as a platform for their individual campuses, as opposed to making it free and allowing students to push the growth. So I think I probably would not have succeeded as well. It's not even like a fair comparison in a way. It's an apples and oranges type situation. I think it would have been difficult to make that into a really successful company because schools tend to be kind of picky about what kind of software they want to buy, and it's an enterprise software play. So who knows how that would have worked out. I do think, you know, for the years between 2004 and, let's say, 2017, roughly, most people who knew my side of the story didn't really give it a whole lot of credit. They thought I was sort of a sore loser and jealous, I think, mostly. And I can totally understand why people would assume that. I've seen a massive shift in sentiment in the past 2 years, really ever since Cambridge Analytica became a public issue, because people realize now that this guy just never was trustworthy in the first place. And so it's been amazing to see the arc in terms of public sentiment. What started as an amazing business success story is now sort of a terrifying, like, horror flick almost. And if they were to remake the movie, I bet it would have a much different ending than the one that was made in 2010.
I think you're right about that, Aaron. Thank you for a fascinating interview today. Aaron Greenspan, Shaker Heights, Ohio native, turned technology developer, philanthropist through Think Computer Corporation and the Think Computer Foundation, and creator of Plain Sight, an internet site that takes legal decisions from obscurity known only to lawyers to transparency available to all of us average citizens. I've used that site. It's a great site. So thank you for the many contributions you've made through your technology, Aaron, and keep up the good work.
Thank you. I really appreciate it.